Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to Following On County Cricketer, a weekly podcast from TalkSport and The Cricketer magazine. I'm TalkSport's cricket editor, John Norman, and with the county championship starting tomorrow, or today if you're listening on Friday, delighted to say that the team are back for a third season. For those of you who've been with us since 2022, the format and the voices stay the same. I'll be joined every Thursday by two-time county championship winner Steve Harmison, as well as Nick Friend and George DeBell from a six-time award-winning at thecricketer.com. The subject, county cricket, domestic T20 cricket, and how it all ties into England cricket. Every county covered, all the news angles dissected, future stars unearthed, and wisdom and insight throughout from the other three. And we get off to a bang this week. The team will be discussing the biggest stories that have affected the game since we were last with you. Changes at the top of England's two biggest counties, trouble at Middlesex and Worcestershire, the ongoing battle between the counties and life in general, and much, much more. And if you like what you hear, please take the time to leave a five-star review on the podcast page and follow at @cricket_TS on Twitter. And for even more content, head over to the TalkSport Cricket YouTube channel and hit subscribe. But for now, thanks for listening to Following On County Cricketer. Well, it's great to be back and it's lovely to see George DeBell, Nick Friend and Steve Harmison peering out from their various studies around the world, or around the country rather, ahead of the county season. We are just about to press go and we've got a couple of months before it all gets taken over somewhat by England and the T20 World Cup and then the Test Series against Sri Lanka and the West Indies. But for now, throughout April and May, it is all about county cricket. We haven't spoken for a few months on the show, but there's been some big stories. And I think the biggest of them all, with my Surrey hat firmly on, should actually be a white helmet, shouldn't it? Alex Stewart leaving Surrey at the end of the year. He's been at the county since 1981, I think, as a player, as a coach, director of cricket, and his dad, of course, his name adorns the pavilion. So, sad times. And the question, really, we'll start with you, George, if that's OK, is who on earth is going to replace the gaffer?
Yeah, I mean, huge, huge boots to fill. Thank you for having me, by the way. Nice to see you all. Huge boots to fill. I was sad that he was going, partly because of the reasons. You know, we know his wife, Lynn, is not brilliantly healthy. And the main thing is, I'm sure everyone hopes that that works out well and hope that he's got the space in his life to come back and have another role in English cricket. I really hope he's director of cricket for England and the ECB one day. And I'm sure he maybe wouldn't have to travel quite as much as previous ones have done. But in terms of, who takes over in a few months? Look, they want, I think, someone with a Surrey background, one way or another. And I've whittled a list down to four-ish. You could, well, and I'll just give you the Tom Moody possibility. Vikram Solanki, favourite. Ebony, Rainford Brent. And Ashley Giles. All of them have, one way or another, a bit of a Surrey pedigree. To be honest with you, I think they're all really good. And I'm not at all sure they'd all be interested. They've all got, other things going on. But as the best people will. But whoever it is will inherit a fantastic club, which is delivering in every way. And it's just worth saying that when he took over, 2013, I think, wasn't it? Surrey was a bit of a basket case, you know, not delivering on the pitch, turbulent, terribly sad times off the pitch. You know, Alex Stewart's turned it round, produced, or that club produced a huge amount of players. Anyone who cares for English cricket should be grateful for him. He's done a fantastic job.
Yeah, well said. I mean, the four names you mentioned, look, I think Vikram Solanke is the name that I think we've all heard mentioned in dispatches the most in regard to taking over. But then we've also heard that maybe his IPL commitments maybe mean it's a year or two too early. But we shall see at the end of this year, because it will be 3 years in. We'll see how the Gujarat Titans, I think, get on with things. Tom Moody, I know the relationship between Alex Stewart and Gareth Batty was an incredibly strong one. And speaking with some of the players, the day they found out that Alex Stewart was decided that to move on at the end of the year, I don't know. I mean, Nick, you might be able to tell me, and you, Harmy, I found it unusual to hear players speak so warmly about a guy at the top of the tree. I'm not sure if that's normal in cricket and county cricket for, you know, the players to have such a relationship with the director at their club. Maybe it is. But one of the things that came from the conversation was that Alec, and we all know how much he loves the county, but, you know, he's more than capable of giving criticism and also praise in equal measure. And I think all of us, in whatever field of work you work in, that is a great boss to have. Someone who will tell you the good and the bad in equal measure. And also someone who's been there and done it. And that's someone that is asking you to do what he himself or herself has done in the past. So he's going to be missed for sure. And that relationship with Bats, guy that obviously I know very well, Harmy does as well. I think that's going to be an interesting one. Now, I know for sure that when we've spoken to Bats before this, he did a section on the show during one of the lunch breaks, his five favourite cricket coaches. And one of the ones he mentioned, apart from Alex Stewart, was Tom Moody. So who knows?
Were they teammates back at Worcestershire in the early noughties? Would that be right? I mean,
no, I don't think they were. I think Tom's coach in Worcester, wasn't he, when Bats was playing?
Yeah, sorry, not teammates, yeah.
That would have been the connection.
I mean, I think the other thing, John, there, you touched on with the relationship and the respect and sort of the reverence that Stewart's got there. I mean, Ollie Pope mentioned it, and I think I've seen the photo on social media in the last few days. Like, there are a lot of players there who can trace their entire careers back to Stewart. You know, I think in Pope's case, it was winning the, what was it, jointly winning the Surrey Under 8s Player of the Year, presented to him by Alec. I spoke to, I interviewed Dan Worrell last week, and he said it was, you know, Alec Stewart who gave him the opportunity to come and play for Surrey on a UK passport, move his life from one side of the world to the other. I suspect that'd be the case for anyone who's joined the club in the last 10, 11 years, or in Pope's case, guys who've come up through the system, whether that's Tom Laws and Gus Atkinson in this current squad, and, you know, Roy Burns, Tom Sibley, or guys who came before and are either still involved, guys like Matt Dunn, Emma Verdi, or lads who've moved on since. I mean, what's clear is that even when Dan Lawrence spoke at Surrey's media days, that, you know, Stewart was a huge pull for him. It's got sort of like Ferguson, Van Persie vibes in a way, isn't it? You get pulled in by the sort of, you know, by the iconic name, and then suddenly you've only got a year with them. But I mean, I think obviously more widely, there's certainly that Ferguson vibe with Stewart. I mean, you know, when he leaves on that final day, he'll leave through his own gate. And as he said to me in an interview last year, you know, this club's been his life, but also his father's life. And he is Surrey to such an extent that you do sort of fear, in a way, for whoever does come into place. Because, as George says, it's a fantastic job. It's a massive job. And it's not just, I think what he's done so well is, I think it's very easy to forget that the DOC job isn't just an extension of a head coach. You know, he is the guy piecing, you know, Surrey of a lot of wealth, a lot of resource. But as Stuart's been very keen to say a lot of times, that comes from the conference and events business as much, you know, as much slash more so than the cricket itself. And the, you know, the complications of coaching aside, there's so many moving parts, guys bouncing between franchises and international duty and all that stuff, and being organised enough as much as anything to put together a squad that is, you know, as competitive and as strong as it is all year round. I do genuinely think it's much tougher than people give him credit, give Surrey credit for. I know they've got the wealth and the resource to do it, but there is always, it always feels like when someone's going away, let's say Ollie Pope for the Ashes last summer, there is always someone coming in. So Tom Latham was, I think, signed up 5-6 weeks before the Ashes started. So there's no, there's not even any thought of, you know, the issues might have in that period. It's almost a surprise when Aaron Hardy pulled out of that gig this year, because that so rarely happens with Surrey. But even then, that Hardy deal was one with the T20 World Cup in mind, knowing they'll probably lose Sam Curran. Who else? Reece Topley, possibly, you know, Will Jacks as well. So a lot of moving parts. It's a massive job someone to take on, as exciting and secure as it is.
Jamie Overton, I think that's the guy that they've been looking at. I think they knew, well, obviously they knew Stokes was going to walk away. I think they've been looking at Jamie Overton quite closely for the last couple of weeks. Harmy, you know Stuart very well. Another guy you know very well, as do I. Goffey, he's also moving on, or has moved on. All change at Yorkshire, a story that George has been across for the last couple of years. Colin Graves is back. From your perspective, you've got links to the county. Historically, you know some of the people involved. Obviously, you know Goffey as well. Your thoughts about those changes? They look very strong on the pitch in Division 2 with some of the England stars that are going to be playing for them for the first couple of months. But what kind of county is Yorkshire going to be moving forward? I know it's quite difficult to surmise that in one sentence or two, but, you know, the optics perception is key, really, isn't it? Is this the same Yorkshire that we've seen over the last couple of years?
No, I don't think it'll be the same Yorkshire, but I think the eyes of the world are watching. And I think the question you're asking, I think that's for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months down the line. I think that's where, you know, where the Colin Graves, I've got no doubt, Colin Graves has done great things for English cricket, for grassroots cricket, and for cricket at Yorkshire and for the ECB. I still can't get my head round, and it was inevitable that he was coming back, but I still can't get my head round the fact that what he was associated with, i.e. the racism stuff that came out, he was effectively chair and in charge. How you come back from that? But he has come back. And I think you have to look at where Yorkshire now are going to go. George talked earlier about the sort of the pool of players Surrey produce every single year, and you know the riches that they can, you know, call upon from the size of the county to bring players in, to produce players to go and play for England. Yorkshire are massive for England, English cricket. I think Yorkshire's huge. I didn't think they could let English cricket could let Yorkshire go. I'm not surprised Aaron left or tried to leave, because I think what he went into and what he was, I think, brought in for was to get back on an even keel, back on an even foot, and try and get Yorkshire moving in a direction which was going forward, progressive. And I think he's done that. I think he's done that more than anybody else, because I'm not sure the job he was going into, I'm not sure all the people were telling him the whole truth and nothing but the truth as it was going on. But once he was in both feet. And I think he did a very, very good job. But I think once the new regime came in, I think that was the end for Darren Goff. And where they'll be on the field, they'll be strong. They're going to have Root and Brook for the majority of the first half of the championship season in the second division. You know, you a mouth-watering tie against Sussex in the middle of May, if all parties are playing. Jaden Seals, Ollie Robinson against Brook and the other, Ed Brook and Root. Got some very, very talented all-rounders, George Hill, Matt Rivers, especially Finn being at the top of the order. I think he is an exciting talent. So I think all in all, Yorkshire will be a force on the field. I was with Gibbo last week and he's very, very positive of how preparations have gone. But I think the initial question of where, what club Yorkshire are, I'm not sure we can answer that yet. I think we have to look further down the line, because I think, and I still think, you know, the eyes of the world should be looking at Yorkshire because of what's happened.
George, I'm not sure if you've got any thoughts on that. but let's flip it on or move it on as well. We talked about the two biggest counties historically in English cricket, Surrey and Yorkshire. Let's talk about the challenges that it seems to be where they find themselves at the start of most seasons, essentially underwater.
Worcestershire, yeah. I think what is happening now is actually unique. I don't think they've had this extent of flooding previously. They've had seven full floods this off-season, one over the Easter weekend. I don't think that's happened before. And I think of the 30 worst floods they've had since 1900, 19 have been this century. I think even the most ardent climate denier would accept that there's a problem. Now, whether you think it's climate change or the water companies or bad bloody luck, I don't know. But there is a problem. And I really respect, actually, the way that Ashley Giles has confronted the issue. You know, there was a danger when someone like him gets a job like that, that they might use it as a step on the career ladder back to, I don't know, what we might see traditionally as a bigger job. But actually, rather like Alex Stewart, and I would have said about Darren Goff, I so respect what those guys have put into the job. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But Ashley Giles, instead of just going with the flow, if you excuse the pun, has said to the members, has trusted the members to be intelligent, really, and said, we've got a problem. We've got a really significant existential problem, without exaggerating. And we need to talk about what we're going to do about it. And I think, and I applaud that, because it would be easy to serve his time there, to get paid and maybe move to, I don't know, Surrey or Warwickshire or some other job that might come back in his career. So he hasn't done that. And I really admire him for taking that on. Now, what do you do? Because you have a ground that is one iconic, for want of a better word, and two, not worth very much. I mean, you know, it's on a floodplain, for God's sake. You can't build on most of it. And what you can build on, there are all sorts of limitations. Long term, if I were a betting fella, which I'm not, I would be saying, I wonder about Parkway, Worcestershire Parkway, which is an area near a new station. There's basically an area of Worcester where they built a station and they're going to build 10,000 homes in the next 20 years or something. I wonder whether it could be part of that, whether the council or the ECB, Worcestershire, could have some sort of joint effort. That's not being talked about as a plan right now. And I also wonder, and I know this will be deeply unpopular with the members of both teams, but Gloucestershire and Worcestershire border one another and they're both looking for new homes. I don't know. Is that a possibility? Maybe that's too radical. Maybe it is. But I just think let's have the conversations, because if we don't have the conversations now, we're going to get to a stage where Worcestershire is obsolete. We're that close. Make no bones about it. If they get another flood in the next couple of weeks, they're not playing their T20s at home. And if they can't play the T20s at home, I think it might be game over. And that's not an exaggeration. That's directly from the club. They can't play at home right now till May the 24th. That's almost 2 months of the season. Yeah, not quite, but almost. You know, they're not a wealthy club. We know how difficult it is for Leicestershire and Derbyshire and Northampton and Worcestershire to survive anyway. When you throw in the fact that they are basically Atlantis, it becomes almost impossible. So I really applaud Ashley Giles for having the honesty to have that conversation with his members. It sounds like they have had a pretty mature response to it as well. And let's see where we go from there. Oh, just one other. A cricketer turned administrator from a former age. I wonder, could Chris Silverwood be involved with Yorkshire going forward? I think he'd be, I don't know, I think he prefers the track-suited role. But if they're looking for a director of cricket with Yorkshire in his blood, successful record as a coach, won the championship twice, didn't he, at Essex? I don't know. I don't think they do a lot better. Just a thought.
I was at the Oval on what day? Tuesday. And Richard Gould, the CEO of the ECB, was doing a roundtable discussion with the journalists. He spoke to TalkSport. One of the questions he was asked was by Lawrence Booth, the Daily Mail, Wisden editor, the Wisden Almanac editor. He said, in 5 years' time, does he expect to see 18 counties? And Richard Gould's answer was, yes, he expects to see, in 5 years' time, at least 18 counties. And I thought that at least response was quite interesting. Wasn't really picked up upon. But of course, there's another county that last year seemed to be really struggling. Going to be playing in Division 2. I think you were at Lords today, Nick. And there's also discussions about maybe the MCC, which you might be able to talk about, George. And Mark Nicholas is going to be in a highfalutin position for the foreseeable. I mean, could you actually see 19 counties? Or could it be 18 counties if Gloucestershire and Worcestershire merge? Who knows? But Nick, are you positive for the season ahead from a Middlesex perspective? Where are the county? They were in all sorts of financial strife last year. And,
I think the best way of phrasing it is probably say they're living with it. They're under those special measures put in place by the ECB that mean that there is essentially a cap on their spending, but the way that cap has worked versus their own plans, John Simpson's left for Sussex, essentially bought out the last year of his contract for a three-year deal at Hove. Tim Murta retired, went on to the coaching staff. And I think all that has meant they've been able to make two really good domestic signings in Leos Deploy from Derbyshire, who a few of us spoke to today, actually. He was just an extremely impressive man and a very good player who I think had the pick of a lot of the circuit when he left Derby. Said London was a big draw for him, Lords a big draw. He's on a five-year deal, I think, as well. So I suspect that was probably, the stability was probably quite a big draw as well. And of course, at the time, they were Division 1 county. So Deploy's come in, Henry Brooks has come in from Warwickshire, who I know that Middlesex were very keen to get, and once again sort of beat a few others to him. Richard Johnson's been a fan for a while, from my understanding. Obviously, Brooks, a couple of years ago, was sort of close to England white ball squads as a teenager, clocked 90 miles an hour. A lot of potential around him. He's had his injuries. But the upshot of this, they don't have an overseas player. They can't. They, to be fair, were quite open with it and said they couldn't. They couldn't bring an overseas player in based on current finances. And the cost as well of hosting overseas players in London is one thing. And then on top of that as well, the cost of flying guys in and out as short-term overseas players. I don't think it should be underestimated, the cost of that, particularly when overseas signings go wrong and you might pay for a flight that never happens, for example. Certainly it's happened the last couple of years at a fair few counties. Middlesex had a few problems with visas as well the last couple of years with, was it Giant Yanov arrived late for a stint last year, and it was the year before that, Majib Rahman, I think, missed an entire last campaign, I think it was 2 years ago. So they're without an overseas player, which is tough, because I think, I don't know, you look at that Division 2 this year, there's no Durham, so you've got we don't know yet if there'll be a runaway leader as there was last year. But what there certainly is at a lot of other counties is the proper gun, you know, leadership overseas players, whether that's Pujara at Sussex, Shah Massoud at Yorkshire, Pete Anscombe the whole year at Leicester, who had a very poor time at Middlesex, but actually went well at Leicester last year. Karen Nair, pretty sure, sharing time at North Ants. Chris Tremaine's at North Ants went very well last year. I'm going to forget some people, but that is the gist, is it? And I guess there is a real value to them, and I think you expect over the course of a season, your overseas player to win you a couple of games. For Middlesex, I think that overseas player is Deploy, essentially, in that he is a domestic player, but he is essentially the gun they've signed across all formats. He's been a top band player in the 100. He has spent all of this winter at the PSL, the SA20, the ILT20 as well, I think. Weirdly plays at the SA20 as an overseas player, as a South African, I think, born in South Africa, I think. Very good player. They need a lot from him. He's going to vice-captain across both formats, all formats rather. But I don't know. I mean, they're broadly optimistic, but because they did get promoted out of this division 2 years ago with essentially the same squad. So if their batters score the runs they didn't score last year, they'll be right up there. If they don't, they won't. But I don't think that's any great insight.
It is good.
Well, sorry, just that last bit. I hope the first bit was useful.
No, it was. And it's good to see that your man crush for Ali Orr from last year, it seems to have been
It's taken him all the way to Division 1.
Well, yeah, it has.
Didn't have
But
to
you've
hit a ball,
changed.
did he?
Yeah,
That's
exactly.
where he was
You've...
Ali last week. And well, Ali also, I mean, I know, I'm sure we'll get to Hampshire in a bit. I mean, if we're
Well,
talking sort of
we could talk
finals.
Hampshire now. I mean,
Well,
as you know,
they'd be my tip to.
let's not talk Hampshire now, because one of the things I wanted to speak about more than any other was Durham. And we've got the perfect person who can speak about Durham. But you know, if you're writing off anybody other than Yorkshire to win Division Two, Palmy, that is. Durham seemed to be the name on most people's lips in terms of challenging Surrey, which, unless you're Neil Manthorpe, who thinks Essex, and we'll find out what George and Nick think about that as well. But give us the reasons why Durham can win the championship this year, and give us the reasons why Durham cannot win the championship this year, Harmy.
I think the reasons why they can win the championship this year is they've just been given a massive bonus and potential of Ben Stokes playing a couple of games for them. I think that's that in itself. Not only does it lift the two, three, four, whatever games he plays, but he's going to be in a changing room, he's practicing and training for the first seven, probably five of the seven games. That gives you a lift because his standards are going to be set ridiculously high. You look at the bowling attack. Yeah, if everybody's fit and everybody's allowed to play, England, Durham might have to leave one of the England bowlers out, potential bowlers out. For me, cut. And this is for further down the line. But England, if England want to win and be the best team in the world, got to start picking bowlers who can bowl fast. Their bowling attack's far too slow. And for me, Ryan Cox is the first name on the team sheet come, what is it, the 10th of July. In at Lord's against the West Indies. That's a number eight, and he bowls fast. And that for me is one of the reasons why he will be part of it. Potts was one of the leading wicket takers in the country last year. Scott Boland is part of this bowling attack. I don't see Mark Wood featuring too much, but if he does, there's four fast bowlers there, and I haven't even mentioned Stokes yet. I think Durham have got the best Parkinson when it comes to the spin bowling department. Sign Colin Ackerman to bat at number four. And with Alex Lees, I think the international dream's over, but listening to Leesy talk and seeing him the other night talking that he still has aspirations if Crawley or Duckett falls over and doesn't make one of the test matches, that if he gets a boatload of runs, he can be in the frame. And then David Bellingham was just getting 100 on international debut in New Zealand. That's a team. Yeah, I'd go as far as to say that I thought I played in part of in 2009, part of one of the best first class teams I would say in the modern generation. We had a bowling attack of Onions, Plunkett, Harmison. We had batters like Benkenstein, Devenito, Chanderpaul, Stoneman, who was just coming into the game. Throw in Stokes, who came in as a 17-year-old. That was a very, very good side. I think. If this team gets a chance to play more often than not in the first seven games, then I think that's what gives Durham a chance to win the championship. Their fixtures fall quite nicely. They play Hampshire twice in the early part. Play Surrey. They don't play Surrey in the first seven games. I think everything fits nicely. And one game. I didn't mention, and he's another one that's going to be knocking on the England doors. Ollie Robinson, the Ollie Robinson wicketkeeper. Me and Manners have called him. He's the Oliver Robinson, not the Ollie Robinson, because obviously we've got two in English cricket. I think throw that into the mix. I think Durham have got what it takes to. The only thing that might stop them is, I mean, it's not stopped raining up here for about 6 months, and it doesn't look like stopping raining anytime soon. And they start first game of the season at home to Hampshire. I'm not saying Hampshire's bowlers will enjoy bowling at Chester Street in the first week of the season. I'm just not sure they might get enough time in to finish a game. So that for me is why Durham can win the league. What will stop them will be international call-ups.
Okay, I now think Durham are going to win the league.
It was compelling, to be
It was
fair.
very compelling. I've
It
got
was
nothing.
absolutely compelling.
I've got
Yeah.
nothing. George.
So here's one for you. But from a selection point of view, if Mark Wood is available for selection, you've got Cox, Potts, Wood, Boland, and you've got to leave one out because
You leave
obviously
me
you've
out.
got
You leave me out. Leave me out. Ben Rain as well.
He hasn't even come into the equation, has he? And Ben Rayne is perfect for these conditions.
He is.
He
best
is.
On the, best one in the country last year, wasn't he?
Yeah. Ben Rayne, Paul Coughlin. Yeah, two players. Baz Dalida, who did really well for Durham last year as well. So did young Klaus. He's not young, but Clark, and the England under 19 captain, who I think is going to be a real talent.
You leave out the Aussie, obviously. You leave out Bowling. Of course you leave him out because we he's not our concern. And then you possibly leave out, Mark Wood is a bit special and he doesn't have anything to prove. And I'm not sure the pitchers will help him. Hey, you make a point about it hasn't stopped raining anywhere, by the way.
I guess I'm with the other side of this is that, I'm sure we'll get this in probably another week, is that you sort of don't really want to be flogging everyone every week, do you? Like, that's essentially the reason, feels like the reason Surrey have been so successful over the last few years is that you can, if you've got that really good sort of cartel of seamers, that you don't have to pick your gun for in every game, then that's sort of what wins titles these days, isn't it? If you can look after your seamers for 6 months to the point that they can still give you what you need come mid-September, then you've got half a chance, which I guess is, I guess which what Durham have that Surrey have, that Hampshire have, that a lot of counties don't have. And I guess with that as well, I guess the old bit of early season rain maybe isn't the worst thing in the world as well. You don't have to, if you've got a 2-day game, there's no need to flog Mark Wood or Bryden Cass with a dodgy forecast, let's say, where you might really need them for the third game, which I think is a Kookaburra round, which could be dry, which could be flat. And then you probably do want to get your quicks on it.
Which Durham's is Worcester away?
Is that
which is not going to be dry.
Worcester away, Kidderminster. That's
poor old. I spoke to Jason Holder today. So Jason Holder's come to England to, work on his skills with a Kookaburra ball, all the rest of it. He finds himself, with the Jukes ball. He finds himself bowling with a Kookaburra ball at Kidderminster with the shortest straight boundaries, surely, in the game. tough old gig. Anyway, good for him. But he must really want to play for West Indies again. He could be lying on the beach in Barbados, couldn't he? Right now. He could be, because he's got a busy old year. And instead, he has taken the tough option and good for him. I'm always a bit uncomfortable. And I know you're right, Nick, that there has to be a balance between bowling workloads and rest and rotation. I'm always just a bit reluctant to start the season by saying, flogging fast bowlers and all the rest of it, because seam bowling's hard. And we do
it is,
need
but isn't, but guys isn't flogging, to pick but isn't, up
their, we do need, they need to pick up their bowling loads. They need to be able to get through back-to-back test tours, because that's the way test tours are now, without any warm-up games.
But is flogging them in advance really the best way of doing that? I'd have thought that you want to earmark who these guys are, who you think can bowl at that pace.
Well, except that Bryden Cass isn't there yet, is he? Harmy's right. He's one of those like John Turner and Josh Hart-Push and even Zach Chaplin-Push. You know, all these people who are really talented and have the raw attributes. But Bryden Cass isn't there yet. He's not the finished article yet. He's quick and promising and strong and looks like there's masses to work with. He's definitely excited. But actually, he is going to have to bowl a fair bit to fine-tune. Potts, actually, probably just about is there. He looks like he learned. And you only do that by playing. So the balance has to be right. And actually, John Turner's an interesting one, because does John Turner, and honestly, I think I mentioned him in last year in this podcast, didn't I? John Turner and Josh Hull are interesting, because I saw them bowl one or two balls, and it was like, what is this? This is the real thing. And you don't get that very often. And that's two coming through together right now, young. I mean, to put it in perspective, I thought that the first ball I saw Stuart Broad, the first ball I saw Andy Carrick, quite special. Harmy. Yeah, because sometimes it's really obvious, the raw attributes, pace. I know it's not everything, but it's not nothing. And there are these guys out there, but we do need them to play a bit as well. And it is hard. And there's no point playing and then pulling up seven overs into a tour.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, this is actually George. I'm just aware of the time is against us a little bit, but Oliver Robinson, you spoke to Ollie Robinson on Wednesday, was it, George? I read your piece today.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
I mean, talking about... the article... Head over to The Cricketer to check out the article. Actually, The Cricketer is committed, remember, to having reporters on the ground every round of county fixes this summer. We're going to find out very shortly where George and Nick are going to be on Friday through to Monday. And that commitment has just been recognised again after it was named the best place to read about the county game online for the sixth year in a row at the ECB's Domestic Cricket Journalism Awards. So well done to everybody concerned there. So for award-winning news and analysis about all 18 counties, maybe it'll be 19 one year, all year round, head to thecricketer.com/subscriptions, maybe it'll be 17, and sign up now for just £3.99 a month. Ollie Robinson. He himself has said it's make or break this year. So we are kind of all in agreement. He's seeing a therapist, thinks it might be mental, thinks he was a bit unfortunate. I kind of get that. You know, he got an injury trying to essentially on the field. It wasn't really about bowling. But you as spoke to him, George.
He said, you can't keep getting injured halfway through a game, seven overs into a game, whatever it was. And
Harmy has been very strong on that exact point. Stuart mentioned it in his autobiography.
He is a special talent. I think there's quite a lot of good in there. I really hope it works out for him. But we don't criticise bowlers who have injuries. And, you know, no one criticised, I don't know, Ricky Elcock, for example. Or these guys whose careers are sort of robbed from them just at the point where it seems they might take it. And maybe he is just unfortunate, but he gives this impression, I don't know, David Gower-esque with the equivalent, that he's very casual. But, you know, for the skills he's got, he's obviously thought about it a lot. I was very impressed with him yesterday. He relished being asked tricky questions. He embraced it. He was honest. There weren't any excuses, at least when he spoke to me at all. There was no trying to say he was hard done by. I'm reluctant to talk about his personal life, partly just because I don't know much about it. I'm not that interested in that side of the world. Good luck to him. None of my business, really. But I'll tell you this, he is a special talent. And he could, without a lot of pace, to be fair, Harmy, be a force in Australia. But you don't want many like that. I mean, I profoundly agree with what Harmy said. England have to take some tough choices in the next few months. They have to do the equivalent to what I was talking about, Ashley Giles at Worcestershire. You know, if England go to the Ashes with James Anderson as their attack leader, I think they're in trouble. Now, it's a great thing that you've got James Anderson still wanting to play and still a brilliant bowler. And on merit, he probably is England's attack leader. It's not necessarily about merit. It's also about building a team for the future and everything else. So they've got difficult decisions, and you can have one bowler like that. You can't have an attack that are putting it on an area and hoping, hoping it's going to be different to last time. So now is the time to look at those other options, and that will be difficult. It's going to take some bravery.
My thing with Ollie, which I've been consistent with, just briefly, because I've gone into far too much about him. For me now, talk sheepy, it's about actions now. He's walked off in three massive test matches for his captain, and I don't think he can do that again. If I was sitting in front of him, I'd be telling him, you've just seen Stuart Broad leave the international arena. You're 30 years old. You have got possibly 4 or 5 years being that role, the tall bowler, leading the attack, he'd be the pantomime villain if you want. You can have, Red Bull cricket, 10, 15 test matches a year, bowling at 84 mile an hour and taking wickets at 22 because you've got the talent. Have you got the discipline to put yourself in a position every single day to set the standard that Stuart Broad did? That's something I would be concerned about. But talent, no question whatsoever. This kid is really, really talented, but he can't bowl at 78 mile an hour from overs four to however many he bowls in a deer spell or a test match, because that's just not good enough. But I think he's a world beater. You can't walk off three test matches, big test matches, the way he has done now, and expect people to go, oh, we feel sorry for you, Ollie, because you're letting your team down, you're letting your captain down.
I think he gets it, Harmy. I think he gets it. I really hope there's a happy ending to that story. But
somebody being critical, been through it. George, I've worn a T-shirt. I understood. I looked in that mirror a couple of times. I was 23, 24. Can he do it at 30? I really, really hope so. Because like I said, he could take Stuart Broad's players for the next 4 years and really drive England's attack forward. Archer, Wood, Robinson. I tell you what, with Stokes going out to Australia, I tell you what, I reckon England could win with that attack. Bashir is a spinner. I think that's an attack. Four test matches with that attack, I reckon England give Australia a really good game.
Well, they do if they score some runs, but yeah.
Yeah.
Guys, we're running out of time. Can I just say I've loved this last half an hour or so. It's so good to be back. I'm loving it. But before we finish, can you just all give me, start with you, George, then Nick, then Harmy, just the things you're looking forward to seeing in the next few months, whether it's a player, whether it's a ground, whether it's a matchup, whether it's a team, whatever. What is it that what is it that you're most looking forward to ahead of this county season?
Who do you want to go? I mean, doesn't everyone in England have some extent seasonal affective disorder? I always think it would be weird if we didn't. And obviously the start of summer is a joy in lots of different ways. I don't know. I've never lost the thrill of going through a county ground, been paid to watch county cricket or cricket in general. It's a thrill. The day it isn't, I will stop. I don't know what's going to happen. I do feel that there's a lot of talent, young talent, untapped talent in the English game. And I'd love to see it flourish. It feels as it should at this time of year, as if the day is in front of us, with all the possibility for adventure and fun. I don't know what's going to happen, but that's kind of glorious about it. So I don't know in particular what I'm looking forward to. I mean, as I say, some of those young bowlers like John Turner, Josh Hull, will be really great to watch in action, Ollie Robinson as well. But, I'm looking at the fixture list and each one of the games I'm going to, I don't know, I can't wait. Bit of a geek, I guess.
What about you, Nick?
It's similar to what George said in the way. I mean, I spoke to Peter Moores yesterday and he said, I don't know, something made a lot of sense. Maybe it's a bit whimsical and stuff, but sort of said the great thing about every season is that you come into the season knowing that at the end of the season you'll be talking about someone you'd never have thought you'd be talking about. If you think 2 years ago, Ben Compton was sort of like the story of the summer, the story of the county summer in a way, having basically joined Kent from Notts Twos. Last season, James Roos scored 500s out of nowhere as a 19-year-old kid. I quite like that. I mean, I watch a lot of county cricket, watch lots of, keep tabs on a lot of guys coming through, and it's quite cool not really knowing what's going to happen with them and who's going to, someone who might have really high hopes for might you know, get injured in week two and not be seen until September. And likewise, someone who you might never really have heard of or thought about before might score 1,000 runs. And of course, the great thing, I don't know, I think what's interesting now with the way that England look particularly is you don't have to take 60 wickets or score 1,200 runs. You could have a very good couple of weeks and get clocked very quickly, score a very good 100 against the right player, and then suddenly you could be on a winter tour. And I think that is quite exciting. I don't, you know, I could throw all the usual names at you. Tuan Amieye is fantastic to watch. I'd love him to have a proper breakthrough year. Ajit Singh Dale, I think, is a really interesting bowler. He's got a really unusual action. He is quick. Spent a lot of this winter net bowling at the Afghanistan Test team. And I think on a good, I know he didn't go in the end, but he was teed up to do some work with an IPL team as a net bowler as well, I think. So there are interesting stories and guys who will be loads better for the winter. Lads on the Lions camp, the Lions tour will be interesting to watch. There's a young squad as well, so like to see who's really come on from there. John Turner is injured at the moment, which is a shame and sort of entirely typical of somebody sort of tour couple winter, isn't it? But you and Josh Hull as well, yeah, a lot. I guess coming onto a lot of people's radar for the first time, probably with that Rob Key interview from a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, fascinating. Because if I give you a name, it'd be someone who would, you know, he might average 20 and not be seen past August. But there'll be someone out there who's not on anyone's radar right now who I suspect will be all over it come August, September time.
And apart from Durham lifting the trophy, Palmy, what are you looking forward to the most?
Looking forward to it. Stop raining first and foremost, because I think once that rain goes away, get some decent pitches. That first division of the county championship, especially the first seven games, I think there's some humding of a game. Some really good quality players playing hard cricket against each other. There's some quick bowlers around now, which I think I'm looking forward to seeing go, see how they go and pull up throughout the sort of this short period of a lot of games, a lot of days played. But as much as, you know, Nick and George has mentioned some younger players, we've got some really good senior players playing cricket in this first seven games. And, you know, one especially, I'll just go one example especially. You've got Joe Root possibly playing five games for Yorkshire. You know, five different venues, an opposition young player, an opposition player not even playing in the game, would be able to go up to Joe Root at lunchtime in the lunchroom and have a chat with him, talk to him. Guy's got 11,500 test match runs. He is one of the nicest guys in the world. He'll give you time as much as you want. Got Ben Stokes doing that, England captain around there as well. So all this, you know, that comes with, you know, county cricket for the first seven games. I think it's probably about the most exciting county cricket start of a season. I think a lot of people have been waiting for in a long, long time because there's a lot of big names playing. And if you've got young players tapping into that, I think it's so valuable for the likes of Rob Key, Brendan McCullum, Matthew Mott going forward, because players will learn so much more in education. Speaking to great players, watching great players from mid-off or mid-on. You know, imagine standing in the field watching Joe Root bat for 5 hours. You're gonna be running around quite a bit, but you're gonna learn a hell of a lot about his temperament and about what it makes him to makes greatness. And that for me is what I'm looking forward to in the first seven games of the county summit.
Every time he talks, he makes me excited.
X-rated.
And look at him. And look at him. He looks a million dollars as well.
Let's go. I just hope it stops raining.
Hey, I can spot talent. This is why I've signed him up. Talk Sport's finest. Well, it's great to be back, guys. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
And we will be back as well. It's you can read all about it on thecricketer.com or pick up a copy of the magazine. You can subscribe away or listen to this podcast via the Following On feed on Talk Sport. But for now, thanks for listening to Following On County Cricketer with myself, John Norman, George DeBell, Nick Friend from The Cricketer, and, of course, the two-time county championship winning Steve Harmison. That's it for now, but we'll be back next week looking back at the first round of fixtures across Division 1 and Division 2 and all the new stories that come up across the opening round of games. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.